to have you all join us. And we are particularly grateful for Malia and September to kick this conversation off. It really is meant to be interactive. So they're gonna share some learning with us and some of their experience, and then really it open it up for more discussion and some shared learning together. So without further ado, September, take it away. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for the chance to be here. I'm September Jarrett, and one of my valued colleagues and leaders in this work together is Malia. We're gonna tag team our work today, and I am having technical issues. So forgive me one second. I am going to hopefully solve them. Malia, do you want to talk about our goal while I figure out my tech problem for me? Maybe not.
Oh, you're on mute,
Malia.
Ah, there we go. So much for my own technical prowess. it's great to be here. We're excited to have this conversation, and really do hope that what we're having today is a conversation and not a presentation. Our goal today really is to have a kind of a case study based practice discussion centered on how we all learn the nuts and bolts of sharing power with community and with community leaders. And we're happy to start the conversation with a use case of an initiative that we are right in the middle of launching called Families Lead California. And I had the opportunity to share a little bit about it when we talked at the first follow-up session. And we're going to do a little bit of a deeper dive on our community engagement process in the grant making. And September is going to sort of start us off by contextualizing where it fits for our foundation.
Thanks, Malia. Can you give me a thumbs up if you can hear me? Okay. So one sort of quick context, we want to share a little bit it's so great to see so many friends, old and new, set a little context about the foundation's work and where this initiative is centered, go through a little bit of the what, the how, some of our reflections, and then really open the space for peer sharing and conversation. We are on a journey and a growth journey, and we hope a sense of growth and a developmental spurt for ourselves of trying to center our work more fully in impacted communities, and have a lot to learn and share still ourselves, and hope to learn with and from you in conversation. So we'll keep this discussion brief. Really briefly about Heising Simons, the foundation that Malia and I are honored to work with. We're a family foundation. We're domestically focused. We're rather large for a family foundation, but small for a national. Last year, we awarded about $150 million and a change to nonprofit organizations throughout the U.S. Last year, we also staged a new institutional partner, Heising Simons Action Fund, that provides social welfare, or C4 dollars, at a smaller scale, at about $5 million last year. And we try and stack those resources to get to systems change in our program areas. We really have five areas in which the foundation works. That includes climate and clean energy, a domestic human rights program that really centers its work on decriminalizing communities of color and immigrants. We have a rich science program that focuses principally on astrophysics, but not exclusively, and underrepresented voices. We also have colleagues that work in journalism and ensuring underrepresented voices and issues get visibility. And then last but not least, Malia and I work in our education program, which centers birth to eight, and is comprised of four program officers that work on early childhood. About the education program briefly, we're proud to have really been part of the early learning and child development field since our inception almost 13 years ago. Our initial work largely was national in focus and centered and initiated some really important work, evidence building and home visiting that Malia holds and continues for us, really important and innovative early math work. And a deep commitment to policy advocacy and early childhood systems change. In 2018, before Malia and mine's time with the foundation, our colleagues did a strategy refresh that organized our work in a few important ways for context for families lead. First, we adopted an equity frame for all our work. Second, we organized a largely responsive portfolio into two major domains. One is enabling conditions or policy. That's the work I hold in California. The other is practice, which is the domain Malia principally holds in California. And we know those two things intersect when good and deep work in early childhood is done, but it also gives us an organizing principle. We allocate our dollars about 70% strategic and major initiatives. Malia has been leading an important body of work for emerging bilinguals, for example. We continue our work in early math innovation. I hold a portfolio that's policy and advocacy and applied research in California that focuses on, you know, small little early childhood issues like financing and growing the amount of investment, governance, workforce supports, and then data for action. Our North Star is equity and closing the equity gap for children, for families, and for providers with a center on under-resourced communities. With that, I'll pass it to Malia to really tell you, with that bigger context, how we came to Families Leading California and how it's important across our program.
Thanks, September. Thanks for setting that context. I can't help but think as I'm listening to September and just to share with all of us what an incredible time, right, to be in early childhood, given we heard some exciting things from the federal administration this week. But Families Lead California, and I know that I shared some of this with some of you when we last met, so I'll be quick and forgive the duplication for those of you who heard this before. So to sort of state the obvious, 2020 called us all to be thinking differently. We all know the degree to which inequities were laid bare as a result of the multiple pandemics, COVID, racial injustice, the impacts of climate change with wildfires, floods, et cetera. And the common theme through all of the convergence was the degree to which they laid bare inequities and race-based inequities, and that families who were already marginalized were facing acute and long-term challenges as a result, and that all the normal systems got us to that point that the stress test revealed. Back to normal isn't the right goal, so that we began thinking, as I know all of you did, that as we begin the long process of recovery, we need to be setting our sights on transformation, because the same kinds of solutions will lead to the same inequities. And to get to a different outcome, we need to do something different. And it's not just that the systems out there, the education systems, the child welfare systems, the home visiting systems, need to do something differently, but that we needed to reflect on what we could do differently to bring that about. So next slide, please.
I would just add, Malia, the portfolio I hold in California, I think, is a more traditional policy advocacy, sort of transactional oriented portfolio as opposed to transformational. And so part of the hope here is to shift that paradigm.
Mm-hmm. And so that reflection of what should we be doing different led us to Families Lead California. And it was guided by multiple inputs that we had been in the process of before COVID hit, listening to our grantees and community partners in a race equity roundtable that we convened at the end of 2019. As COVID hit, we had commissioned a brief by Bridgespan about equitable grant making in early childhood. And of course, all the work that we've been discussing in this forum around trust-based philanthropy, and the same themes kept emerging about widening the aperture on how we find and select grantees, and thinking more broadly about what can be sometimes very narrow strategic priorities that we needed to invite and attend to and follow the lead of community voice, and that we needed to offer flexibility and unrestricted funding. And trust the principle that if we found the right community-based leaders who were accountable to community and not to us, they would know what to do. And so with those themes kind of stacking and saturating and triangulating, we asked our board for permission to take a portion of our budget to experiment with doing something different, which is Families Lead California. And next slide. Families Lead California. The goals are here, and I won't read them to you. You can read the goals of initiative, but it's fundamentally an initiative that is trying to recognize that families know what they need. They know what their children need to thrive. They know better than we do. And that the solutions that will help families of young children recover from the pandemics will emerge from families with lived experience and parent-led organizations that are closest to that experience. And that we have to do things differently to share and build power. The theory of change is a fairly simple one, that our job was to identify the leaders and the organizations closest to parents of colors, give them unrestricted funding to strengthen that sector, and that sector, in doing the work and following its own priorities, would strengthen the pipeline for diverse parent leaders. And so that was sort of the big picture. And September is going to tell you a little bit about what that looked like specifically and what we're in the middle of right now.
Yeah. Thanks, Malia. I still get goosebumps when you talk about it, the journey we're on together. So we set aside about 10% of our respective budgets to do some innovation, which is about $2.7 million directed to parent power. We estimated a range of 9 to 12 grants. Spoiler alert, we have 11 in process. So that's where we're landing. The grant range is $225,000 to $300,000 over 3 years, so significant, probably not as much as this work demands, but significant and for a duration. We're working through, as Malia said, unrestricted funding. We really wanted groups to be, you know, these seeds of parent leadership to be watered flexibly in the directions that communities and parents need. For us, this was a big deal. We historically have worked invitation only. There's a few exceptions in our history as a foundation, but that's our default process. So Malia led us through a process to do an open call application, relatively abbreviated. We got a little worried partway through we might issue an application and not get any. We got the gift of more than 80 very strong applications and difficult choices that we wrestled with in a more participatory process, which I'll talk about next. So the how we got to this point, Malia talked about some of our scan work with Bridgespan and Equity Advisory Council that had done some work with us previously. She engaged a consultant to do a scan to inform a California-specific strategy and lead us to this request for applications open process in California. We used, in addition to developing the applications, we, you know, did the work of what was the type of leadership and the choice making that would guide us. We had a rubric that was informed by that scan and research. Staff, we huddled up and had a sea of wonderful applications to review. We each application was reviewed by at least two staff, and we took the group of, it was really 83, I think, if I'm remembering the number right, to narrow to our top 25. And we did our own individual ranking and sort of numeric scoring, and then a more qualitative sets of questions and issues and balance. We looked really hard for balance in type of organization in terms of sort of the family engagement continuum from maybe traditional in-program, in-community family engagement to parent leadership and systems change. We looked for geographic diversity. We looked for ethnic diversity centered on BIPOC communities and several other factors, org size, stage, nature of work. We wrestled really hard and narrowed the 83 down to 25 that we felt, we all collectively felt we could stand behind funding, and then shared power and passed on those top 25 to our community advisors. Malia will tell you a little more about that magic in a second. Those community advisors were recruited, trained, and supported, and used the same rubric staff did to then do their pass on the top proposals from our view to then select a top 12 to award. From that selection process, the staff and community advisors invited finalists into a panel interview that was relationship-based to animate the application and the work, build connection and rapport, learning a bit more about the organizations, the community-based organizations work, learning a bit more about the foundation to set a process moving forward. We used a very, for us, streamlined due diligence process, trying to keep the administrative burden on these community-based organizations small and the paperwork limited. And we're right now in the process of moving those. We've finished interviews just last Friday. Oh my gosh. And are moving through. Now we're kind of with a bunch of front loading with our board and strategy. We're going through our sort of more traditional grant process where we as staff are able to make recommendations and the board considers on track to issue awards with a start date by July 1st. I'll pass the ball to Malia. The magic really is the community advisors, and we want to share a bit more about that, and Malia will do so.
So I love that this is the image that September chose for the magic of community advisors, because, you know, sort of in the spirit of the Star Trek opening credits, this really is a new frontier for us. The whole idea of sharing power and having parent leaders who are proximate to the work making the final decisions about the slate was super exciting, and a little bit about how we did it. So first of all, we obviously couldn't use parent leaders in California. They would have conflicts of interest because this was an open call RFP. So we engaged a consultant who had sort of deep network and knowledge in parent leadership organizations, both in the state and nationally. And we asked her to recruit and identify a diverse cohort of advisors. We ended up with 13 parent leaders. We asked for the moon when we said, we want them to be diverse in these 800 ways. And she completely found those really outstanding parent leaders to help us out. And as September said, their function was really community advised grant making. They scored, they reviewed, they interviewed, their recommendations drove decisions about this final slate of 11. And I have put up in the chat a link to the job description. One of the things that our consultant who built this pool did was create a job description that clearly defined the functions that we were asking, clearly defined the level of effort. And that's there. That may be helpful to you as you think about it. We compensated them, obviously. We had a lot of interesting conversations about the balance between the aspiration to compensate their expertise in the same way we would compensate academic or other more traditional kinds of expertise, and also not sort of getting way out of whack in terms of what the field does when we compensate parent leaders. And that's a little bit of an equity sticky wicket and learning to be had. One of the things that we think was the secret sauce is they as a group were really supported in community building and to be successful. So that group, they didn't know each other necessarily. I see that the link can't be accessed. We can, I'll try to send it out by email afterwards if people are interested. Sorry about that. Supported in community building and to be successful. So they didn't know each other. They were from all over the country outside of California. Our consultant began with doing sort of mingles, time for them to get to know each other in a relationship-based way and build trust. We did training to orient them to the initiative and to the rubric. There were regular office hours once a week where the consultant was available on the phone and they could drop in for help throughout the process. There were regular debriefs between the community and advisors and the Heising Simon staff. So they had the opportunity to ask us questions and share their perceptions with us as we went through. And I have to say, they challenged us. They were candid and critical friends. They were brave. And their presence in the interviews, I think, communicated a very different message to applicants. And they challenged not only us, but the applicants in a very different way than we could about the authenticity of parent leadership and how parents were showing up in the work. And so we could go on and on and on about it, but want to move into conversation, but it was a really exciting process to have them join us. Oh.
Sorry, this is beyond my capabilities, you can tell. I'm holding my tongue of different examples only because we wanna have a conversation with you. Just a little bit more to share and then we'll move to conversation if my computer won't go. Which it is not, there we go. We're partway through the journey. So as we said, the magic of these interviews, and we're moving into recommendations to our board with just huge goosebumps and excitement about the relationships and the work ahead. We are imagining these grantees serving as a cohort. We are going to co-design right-sized opportunities of where and how they want to connect across organization. We heard things about, you know, organizing training or communications opportunities. We're also budgeting customized organizational support or capacity building, knowing that many of these groups have been under-resourced. And in addition, from the flexible dollars, there's opportunities to bolster their work, and then we'll co-design an initiative level evaluation, both pairing our hopes and goals that we've outlined as funder, but also identifying the opportunities and the metrics of success that they see for their work as a cohort working for positive change and parent voice in California. We have a few reflections to date. I guess these are shared. I'll share these. Do agains, and it's really Malia's leadership that really got us to a place where we can share these, so props to Malia. We would definitely want and have really identified ourselves to do more cross-team collaboration. We hold, you know, policy and practice portfolios, we hold national, we hold California, we each have different skills and experiences, and this kind of coming together to really center the work, whether practice or policy, in communities and guided by communities is a shared value and a benefit. And we want to do more collaborating. we definitely feel affirmed and excited about opening the Gilded Doors of the Foundation for open call. And so at the right time, I think it'll be a hybrid mix, but we have confidence and appetite for doing more open call or requests for application work. We definitely want to do more with community advisors, and we feel confident in sharing power with community and decision-making for resources and grants. We're sure we want to support an infrastructure for community advisors ongoing. I've made new friends throughout the country through this process who have really enriched my perspective and my professional work. And we're thinking about an ongoing role for the community advisor cohort. And then we feel very good and have more to do, it's truthful, to streamline our application and due diligence process to really right size what we need and why we need it. We interrogated a lot through this process. What do we need and why? And tried to really skinny it up. Malia will share about what we might do a little differently.
Yeah. As September says, we are definitely on a learning journey, and there are things that, in what we hope is the next time we'll do differently. One is that what this took from our colleagues across the foundation in terms of our tech people figuring out how to open up our system so that we could absorb 83 applications, our grants management process really helping us think what it might mean to have a very, very small grassroots community-based organization, or how we could do unrestricted funding for fiscally sponsored organizations. Our legal counsel thinking very carefully with us about how we could both make sure we were following all the rules, but also encouraging and to the degree that we were allowed to, privileging BIPOC organizations. All of that took time, we were super fortunate that every single one of our colleagues throughout the foundation was all in on the equity goal and all in on helping us, and had feedback for us about perhaps we could have given them a little more time. So we'll do that differently next time. And similarly, the community advisors, we have room to grow around living our values when it comes to strategy being driven by community advisors. And by the time we brought these community advisors in, the RFP was pretty much fully baked. We had ideas about what we were gonna do, even in a unrestricted funding. And they certainly let us know that it would have been helpful to have them in earlier in the process, in the design of the initiative, in the design of the RFA, in how we did the early screening. As an example, they have some really good ideas about things like speed dating, quick interviews for a larger group than we were able to. That's just a really small example of a concrete place where they were like, hey, if you had asked us earlier, we would have helped you do this in a different and perhaps more equitable way. And finally, as we come to the close of this part of the process, as we're about to send the slate onto the board, it's as September said, we are all feeling a little giddy and excited about the new relationships with the community advisors. We're all feeling really deeply how rich their contribution has been. And we didn't do the upfront work to think about what then happens next, about their ongoing relationship with both the initiative and the foundation. They are deeply invested. They are stakeholders. They are asking us questions as we go about how we're going to track progress and what we're going to do with learning and how we're going to share with other parts of the philanthropic sector to drive these kinds of changes. And they want to be part of it. And we have thinking to do about that. And if we had all this to do again, I think we would have made that pathway more clear to them early on and more clear internally early on, so that we could build in the structures that will help us distribute this learning more broadly than this one initiative throughout our program. And so those are just a few things. I'm sure there are more in September, May, have things to add to that. But again, we want to get to the conversation.
So let's do that. We have a few prompts that we wanted to share, and I'll try and multitask and get those in the chat, but we really appreciate the opportunity to be in community with all of you and to share what we're learning. And we'd love to now shift gears and learn from you. And want to explore the grant practices you have used to shift and share power with community, and what you've learned that's worked well, what you've learned that's not worked well. And then near the end, maybe we can work those through. And then it'd be a gift to wrap up by sharing a bit with each other about what more learning we might want to do together in this forum. So with that, I'll probably pass the floor back to you, Fran, and stop sharing so we can all see each other and begin discussing.
Thank you. Thank you. Wow. I don't know. I found it fascinating, amazing, incredible work, a lot of work, and a lot of learning. Thank you for sharing with us. I'm opening it up to the group. You pose some questions. Who's doing what? What worked well? What didn't work well? Let's open it up and have the opportunity for a conversation and shared learning. Somebody start.
I'll start.
Oh, go ahead, Kate.
I'm trying to move back, but I just jumped in here, so apologies. Meaning move back, let somebody else start. I have a lot. First of all, let me just say like the obvious, which is this is like so inspiring. In some ways I feel like it shouldn't be, because we should have been doing this for a long time, or more of us should have been doing this for a long time. On the other hand, we haven't been. And so I'm Cara Dukakis, I am from Tipping Point. At least for Tipping Point, I'm so excited to go back and share what you all have done and what you've learned, and to help, move us forward. We're doing some stuff. I'm struggling a little bit because the prompts were about what we're doing, but I have follow-up questions for you all. So I'm wondering if I can at least ask a couple of questions of you all, and then maybe other people can share. So I am just wondering how you all in the process of both selecting the grantees ultimately with the advisory board, the community advisory board, and in the process of selecting the community advisory board, how did you sort of reach folks who were not sort of the typical, or maybe, I don't know, but I'm just curious about reaching either organizations or folks who are not sort of known already, who are not who really needed this in some ways, because I think there's a tension for us between a really strong program and a program that, because it's been underfunded for decades, has not had the opportunity so many fields with people of color in them. So all fields, basically. So I guess I'm just wondering how you navigated that, and how much emphasis you put on it.
Start, and then I'll pass to Malia. I'll talk about the outreach process. So first of all, we were remiss to say thank you, because many of you, including Cara, shared the RFA for us. And so it was very snowballed within philanthropy, within our leadership networks. A lifetime ago, I was an organizer, way back. And so on social media, I reconnected with people that hadn't talked to in 10 or 15 years. So it was very organic, each one teach. So I think that kind of opportunity to share within networks and across networks helped get the RFA in front of a much more diverse group of organizations than any one of our networks would have access to or lead. And so I want to thank all of you who partnered and shared it and helped make us be successful with the outreach. In terms of the advisors, I'll pass the ball to Malia about her magic and the consultants she leveraged that sort of leveraged a bunch of national networks for us.
And I would just to before going to the community advisors, we didn't know, Cara, how successful it would be. It was like the, what if we throw a party and nobody comes?
Malia, that data, remind me, because I don't want to misspeak, you know, and make up numbers. We analyzed how many of the 83 were known to us previously, either closed grantees or current grantees versus new. I want to say it was about 70% new to the foundation. Is that about right, Malia?
Yeah, I think it may have been a little bit north of that. Between 70 and 80% were organizations that were new to us. And in the final 11, we have a few folks who have been grantees of the foundation before, three, but the majority of them are new to us. And I think in the negotiation, you know, what you're referring to about, you know, where do we go out of our comfort zone and a less known or a less well-established organization? I think we talked last about this idea that we were really clear with our board that this was a 10% of our California budget. It's not like we were taking the whole budget and going rogue. And that given that compartmentalization, we could afford some risk. And that if we didn't push ourselves to take some risks, we weren't doing this right, right? So, and we didn't throw due diligence out the window. We did have a lot of applicants who looked really great, but we were just like, the board is trusting us to try something different. We really can't push it quite that far. So there was a balance. In terms of finding the community advisors, we really just relied on, confusingly, our consultant's name is Malia Franklin, but we were fortunate in having somebody who facilitates the Parent Leadership Network for the Center for the Study of Social Policy and is deeply involved in United Parents Leadership Action Network. And so she has really deep networks in the parent leadership community nationally and was the executive director of a parent leadership organization in California for many years. And I would say the only credit we get is we knew enough to know that we weren't the right people to go find these advisors. We had to find somebody who was really able to do it in a way that we weren't. And boy, did she find a great group for us.
And I would just add a little two quick reflections to extend those examples. So we each have different portfolios and we're kind of moving the cohort through kind of our different buckets, kind of policy and practice. It's not perfect, but we're thinking about, you know, some of the proximity we might want from some of these parent groups to policy work, for example, or other programmatic work. And so I'll just say of the five we're moving through to recommendations, like one super obvious old friend, Parent Voices, and the experience of parent, like we couldn't do parent leadership in California without Parent Voices being part of it, even though they're already a grantee, right? But like having the community advisors was so interesting because Mary and Jennifer and Clarissa like show up on the call and they're like, wait, who's this? And there were two parent leaders they'd never met before. And like that, they were like, wait, are you from Rochester? Are you the folks in Rochester? They're like, no, we're from Portland. You know, one woman's like, I'm from Portland. This is what I do. Another one's like, I'm from Ireland. It was like, that was an interesting. So that's an example, like on the parent advisor side, on the portfolio that I'm helping recommend through this process. There's a couple like confident, clear, longstanding, you know, Parent Voices being that example. There's a few never heard of getting new through the process that we never would have, I don't think I would have been aware of or known about through this. And you know, once feels really risky. Traditional community organizing power building groups through the PICO network, for those of you who know PICO, who are saying the right things about birth tape, but you'll wonder, and it hasn't been resourced. But it's in a geography of the state with a lot of promise and the right risk for us to take in sort of that power building network. So just to put a little, like it's not, it's diverse within sort of I think, the band of who we met and the risks we're choosing to take and growth I hope we'll see from it.
And I would just say one of the things that's been really interesting to me is the voices that have been raised in the process about, is that the right risk? How are you going to know? How are you going to know that you made a good investment? Are largely, I mean, not that we're not asking those questions, but the leading edge on that is our community advisors.
Really interesting. Thank you so much.
I have a question. Thank you for that. That was really inspiring. And I don't really have much to share because I am definitely, we're not as far along as you. We're really happy to learn from you. I'm wondering a couple things. One is if you could say a little bit more about the community advisors, what kinds of roles that they hold. It sounds like maybe they're leaders of organizations, but I'm not sure. And then I was wondering if they're all out of state, because you did talk about this conflict of interest issue. So it's sort of like you mentioned parent voices, but what if they were one of the ones you wanted to fund and they were a community advisor? And then the second question is logistical, because it's some, this is something that we've been interested in doing, but you talked about 10% of your budget. So did you, was this additional funding or did you have to reduce? This is what we would have to do. We would probably have a certain amount of funding, right? And then we'd have to reduce if our funding to current grantees if we wanted to engage in something like this. So I wondered how you, if that was the case for you, or how, you know, how you handled that.
I'll start and move to you, September. On the community advisors, they were all from out of state. And they were not only all from out of state, but if they were affiliated with a national organization like UPlan or COFI, some attention was paid to make sure that they weren't closely affiliated with a California affiliate. So we tried to eliminate, and we did conflict of interest before the reads and all that.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And is it fair to say, Malia, some of the parents were like parent volunteer leaders in their communities, and some were parents who moved into parent organizing or paid parent leadership work? There was a mix. Like, I'm thinking of them. Advisors I worked most closely with. One was a mom of a special needs kid who had developed a whole parent-led network in Boston about inclusion work and was just a total dynamo. Another parent I worked with was a volunteer in her community.
And we had at least one who, we had several actually who were, had through their own pipelines become paid staff in parent leadership organizations in their communities. Were volunteer leaders in national PTA, for example. So it was really a wide range. Mm-hmm. In terms of budget, I think our major initiatives and the dollars that we had allocated for major initiatives contained strands that are related to this. So for example, in the emerging bilingual work, there has always been a pillar in the work that was about family leadership and building capacity of families to be, to hold their educational systems accountable for their learners. So that those dollars were there. I would say this is a place where in 2019, when that strategy memo was drafted, I probably would have imagined a different way that that money was going to be allocated, that was more sort of traditionally strategic, tactical, use a landscape scan. And in that pivot of 2020, we got to do something different. It, I would say, kind of gave us a nudge to say, stop it. That's not listening to parents. Take those dollars, invest them now in an unrestricted way, knowing that the arc of the initiative is long, and that trusting that the relationships that we will build will then help develop a better informed, more community-driven set of strategic investments down the line. And so which is a long way or an example of saying, finding the places in our existing strategic approved initiatives where we had intended to be family facing and parent focused, and giving up control a little bit and trusting that this is going to get us to that down the line in a better way. And that's sort of my perspective from the practice side. And September's answer may be, you know, unique to the policy and power building side.
Yeah, I think that's right, Malia. I would say two different things. I would say we had identified like kind of a gap in our ecosystem. We take a field frame in our policy and advocacy. We have an ecosystem sort of view. We're doing some evaluative work with our grantees on that. And that work had already identified, you know, a gap in parent and provider voice. So there was consensus, not just from staff, but with existing grantees about the need and opportunity pre-pandemic, but I think accelerated and like impatient, I think for all of us to really take that leap. So that's one answer. And there was a scan, I have a scan I commissioned like sort of at the same time, like, what do I do with that? I don't know. And it was the nice thing, a few of the family leads group were in that more traditional philanthropic scan. So that gave me affirmation on a couple of the seeds that got identified in both. But we're making sense of that. And quite frankly, you know, Heising-Simons Foundation has been generous in early childhood and in our tenure despite COVID and some initial like, oh no, we actually did more grant making. So we haven't had the difficulty of either flat budget or reduction budget that we know many of our colleagues have. And we do have, you know, the family endowed us, but they also, you know, about 60% of our budget they pay in every year. And they've been incredibly generous in general to early childhood. It's our biggest grant program and grant area. And they've doubled down in the window of COVID and the policy reforms and the work. So we don't have as difficult as a budget as I've had in other circumstances. So that's an important context to be candid about.
That's really helpful. Thank you.
Anybody
else? Can we turn the tables and hear from folks, things that have worked, things that didn't work, things you might try?
Hi, Malia and September. I'm going to take another page. I'm sorry, I'm going to ask some more questions because what you put in front of us was just such a great model. It's very rich. And I think that there's so much that we can unpack here and learn from. So what I heard in this conversation were a lot of undertones of work that had to happen prior to getting to this place. I heard undertones of, like, Malia, how you talked about the strategy. Even you all had decided, you know, let's take that 10% safe to fail sort of approach for innovation, so that it's not the entire investment. And I'm sure that that was, you know, like, what even made you all get to the 10%? How did you all decide that that was a safe enough number that you all were gonna work with? So my question is, like, how much time and planning did it take before you all took on these pieces, these heavy pieces? And then secondly, you all mentioned, and I put a question in the chat, you all mentioned that you all were working with an equity framework initially. And I'm wondering if that had anything to do sort of to see the thoughts of, like, where you all decided, you know, that you all would take the education team on this journey.
You saw me laughing, Shahina, about how much
time I did not.
Was there, because probably not as much as we should have, I guess, is one of the answers. But the other part of that answer is the gift of urgency because of the pandemics, and a shared bias to action. And knowing that part of what stops us from doing things differently is planning it to death.
Mm.
And sort of just saying, we don't have it all figured out, but we're going to leap. And having the incredible luxury of a program director and board who were willing to go there with us. And I actually think that take 10% and frame it as an experiment came from Barbara, came from our program director, who said very wisely, this is going to be a way to respond to some of the questions we're likely to get from leadership in a way that leaves you room to say, we don't know. We haven't planned it all out. We don't know every answer. This is how we're going to learn what the answers are.
I love it. That's very helpful. And then the equity framework that September you talked about, what was that? And was that for the entire foundation or just for your—
I'm going to laugh now, right? We're in a safe place with peers, Malia. before Malia and I joined, our team did a strategy refresh and adopted an equity frame, an equity goal for our work in California. So that I would argue North Star was planted. And then some of the deeper work, like what do we mean? How does that look like? How do we hold ourselves accountable as a board-driven white-led organization? Like that is work still very much in process. So I would just say it continues to be iterative. Our team has continued to do DEI work. Malia is at a DEI cross-foundation table that's so vital for our own internal work on white supremacy culture, and a lot of work we're all doing and need to continue to do with urgency. We also, the joy of being a family foundation is we have strategies. We have an amazing staff with just such complementary lived and professional skill sets, but every program's our own program. And we all have equity goals defined slightly different ways, or we're all trying to do cross-program work right now in power building and like centering in a definition of organizing versus mobilizing. And like, we're all trying to, like, we're in that journey right now. And I laughed when you asked that because we are Tuesday, maybe Malia, Monday, I don't know, Wednesday next week. I'm not prepared for it yet. We're doing cross-organization work on our equity framework, which does not yet exist across program. And we're stretching ourselves to try and put in place sort of from bottom to top, internal, but also external, to have a lot more, I think, I hope, coherence and accountability to ourselves about what we mean, how we mean, and how we grow over time, whether it's internal or external. So that's my perspective. Malia, what would you add about our—
I think what I would add is, I think a real learning edge, certainly for me personally, I think it's fair to say for the foundation, and I really welcome the conversation with peers in this safe space, is thinking about how to get past being race neutral when we talk about equity. And, you know, the example is, we did that dance here where we really wanted one of the goals to be building a support and holding space for there to be a support network of BIPOC leaders, not telling them what they needed, but providing resource and space. Before we as a foundation have figured out how we're even going to ask those demographics, we don't ask it of applicants, right? And so it feels like a real learning edge about how we walk away from being race neutral, knowing that that's what is needed. And that's really an area where I'd love to learn and hear how others are grappling.
So I'll just add to that, Malia, that like right now within our foundation, I am boldly and courageously, and that's why this space is just so important to me. Thank you. Trying to get to a place where we adopt this anti-oppressive pedagogy across the foundation. Because you guys know what it feels like. Once you take on within your department this this racial justice, this racial equity, and you start feeling that, you know, we really want to empower people and we want to shift and we think it's so important, this sense of freedom. You can't put that back in a container when you're having a conversation with the foundation about other stuff. So it's not just pushing like my team, part of it was pushing my team, but then now it's like we're on that edge, that precipice now of needing to push the foundation along further so that this is a conversation that the entire foundation is having and moving in that direction. And that is a very challenging place to be in. So I'm happy to be in this space and would love to continue to learn with you all, with this team, in ways in which we can do that. So that's where I am.
What anti-oppression pedagogy are you referring to, Shahina? I'm curious.
Thank you. So there are liberatory designs. I don't know if you all are familiar with liberatory designs. Those of us that are in education, it sounds it's very similar to like an inquiry-based learning, where you apply certain practices for investigating. So it's like, how do you peel back the layers of something? How do you analyze it with a racial justice lens? There is, through the National Equity Project and Stanford, I believe, what they call the liberatory design in particular. And it is a mindset shift, which engages several principles in which you think about your work, the way in which you engage within the work, how you enlist other people to support you in the thinking and the work that you're doing outward. So it's like ways in which you're asking questions about what you're intending. Without speaking generally, I'll just say that, as I had mentioned before, we have a community strategy council. And within this council, we are engaging them in this liberatory design work. And the purpose is for them to build the capacity in at some point engaging their own organization through this work. But for our purposes, we have just put out there that we have an equity challenge. And our equity challenge is, like other philanthropic organizations, for years, we have done grant making and it has not included the voices of parents and stakeholders. We have just done what we were going to do. We have millions of dollars. The foundation, prior to me being there, had, you know, good intentions and good hope of, we have millions of dollars and we want to teach kids how to read. And so, you know, they picked the programs, they picked the leaders, they picked whomever. And the idea is, you know, we're going to go in and we're going to save Oakland. You know, so you have this group of foundation, family foundation, that, you know, metaphorically can be, you know, seen in the community as, you know, white saviors. And, you know, that's problematic, because anytime you have the agenda solely, you are in itself perpetuating oppression. You have an oppressive agenda by not involving other folks. Now, the positive is that many of those tools were very helpful. So that's the great thing. But like anything else, when people haven't had a choice to select them, what do they feel? They feel like it's pushed on them. So, you know, there are lots of issues in that. And then you look up, and not only was a program selected for them that we've invested millions of dollars into, but then you think about like the program itself, it's not BIPOC leadership. So, you know, again, we've invested money in a single solution, and in that single solution, yes, the system may have benefited from that program, but so did this white-led organization for years. And so, you know, what are we really saying in terms of our community, that the community itself can't think of some solutions? You know, so there are just so many challenges with that. And so stepping back as a result of me coming in, it's like, well, wait a minute. We're coming up, I saw an opportunity. Like, we have an opportunity to come up with this 3-year strategic plan, as I mentioned. And how come we're not gonna ask the community for input? Like, it just didn't make sense to me. So that's the very beginning of thinking about, with this liberatory design, how do we engage now this group, this community council, in ways in which we can shift our grant making to be more responsive to the community. Our strategies are vetted by them, if not, co-designed by them. And so that's the direction now of where we want to take our grant making. And it informed us greatly when we sent out money for COVID dollars, like almost, you know, $1 million or so in COVID dollars, they were able to tell us like where to put that money. And that was a huge difference. We've never done anything like that before. We again relied on folks that we have been in partnership with, exception of one person. And so millions of dollars again went to white-led organizations. So, you know, it's the shift is beginning, and it's beginning with the process of work where we are now thinking about, well, why did we do it that way? And with this new challenge, you know, how could we center the voices of the community? What would that look like? What's really the barrier for that? So it's that liberatory design piece that has those mindsets that we're using. And so what I'm trying to do now is share that liberatory design with the entire foundation. And that's right now where it's a little scary, because that would mean that, Malia, to your point, race would no longer be neutral. And we would have to talk about, like, we are trying to not just teach kids how to read, but we're trying to liberate the community. That's a big deal, you know? And so that means shifting power. Like, instead of the power just being centered in the foundation and this family-run foundation for forever, back to the community where you and I both know those dollars actually came from, you know? So that's kind of where we are. I would be happy to share more of the liberatory design with you all. Frank, should
I just- Sounds like design thinking with equity. It sounds like racial equity plus design thinking, which is what Stanford probably offers.
Yeah. But NEP has added their National Equity Project, has added sort of a spin to it. And so there were 6 sort of circles of thinking they've added. There were 5, they added a 6th to it. And so it does present more of thinking around the racial equity and oppression. And so, like, the point is that how do you deconstruct the system of oppression? And so, like, just going back, so just giving a program a single solution is not gonna, it doesn't cut it. So, Fran, is this a good time to mention just briefly
while I have sure. Yeah.
So I have been thinking with the rest of the ECF team ways in which we can continue this learning, because we know, like Malia in September, that this is a very huge journey. It's a long journey and it's a huge undertaking. Ways in which we can continue to support this community with this conversation, because we can't, you know, get it all in an hour or an hour and a half. And for those of us that know that this is not going to go away anytime soon, we would, you know, we're trying to think of ways that we could engage sort of offline, so to speak, this work. And I would be happy to support, you know, a team, a group of anyone that's interested in us staying connected around these topics and following up with more learning, with more tools, with more resources. Us, you know, again, just being very open and honest in the safe space to continue to explore, you know, what this means. I mean, and the bottom line is, when we do this and we really pull off, you know, our pull off the filter, you know, and take off the mask, we're really helping our community, our children. And that's really what it's about, you know, getting folks to see how important this work is, and the true impact of really deconstructing the oppressive systems that, that are true barriers to children being successful. And with President Biden and his new commitment, I think that this is a major opportunity. Like, he's calling it out. And why not, you know, our group take this opportunity to be leaders in this work? So I don't know what it would look like, but if you want to drop in the chat that you are interested in continuing this learning process and journey, I would love to, as a learner, go along on this journey with you. I've as I mentioned, I'm a director at the Rainin Foundation, and I'm leading the education team in this work. I'm involved in the equity work of the foundation. And then also I am, I just received a certificate at Harvard Kennedy School around non-for-profit leadership and strategic development. And so that has been very helpful for me to lean on in this work. Okay, so I'll take that information offline, and anyone else that wants to share, please do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Shahina. It looks like we're getting lots of chats, and I think the leadership team will talk more about what and how to roll this out and what additional learning sessions we might want to continue to offer. These have been really wildly well received. And I mean, there's 15 people here today. That's remarkable, actually, for knowing how busy you all are. So I think ECF and or Shahina, or however we roll this out, people are really interested in staying connected and learning some more. So we will figure out how to keep doing that. Any last minute thoughts? Anybody want to share anything that they're doing?
I just want to say thank you to September and Malia again. I've heard a lot of these presentations on participatory grant making, and this was the best in that it was concrete about, this is what we did. These are the things we struggled with. Many of them, they just talk about why, but you actually talked about how you did it, where you started, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Jen.
Absolutely.
Fran, yeah. Can you just have a group dance? I don't want to shift, but it's a big week in early childhood. Remember when we were just excited that Obama said early childhood? Who expected? I mean, it's goosebumps. And then us Bay Area people, the Supreme Court passing on SFECE Prop C, huge. Democratic door to voter decided investments. I don't want to overstate it. They're still, you know, legal lawyer, but this has been a week.
Yeah.
And so I just, I don't know how we share out or celebrate or group dance or something, but we're in community. Like many of us have been working for decades together, and it's like a moment, right?
And we have a state senator who 2 days ago proposed a budget ask for $20 million for the first five system to be able to work on our multi-sector collaboratives and siloed systems. And you know what? Everybody's always making a budget ask, but you know what? It means something. Josh Newman from Orange County, it means something. And it's kind of like, it's catching, you know, that we've got to fix our systems. Look what happened to us during this last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's great.
True. About damn time.
Yeah, really. But what a great thing to look forward to. I mean, you know, it's been a rough year, and how nice to know that at least these things are being elevated and talked about, and maybe some of them will actually happen.
And childcare is like in the infrastructure bill and school facilities. Like, I'm sorry to be so nerdy, but like, it's we've got to make these things real. But it's like, I don't think we could have, and we say the B word regularly. And now we're learning the T word in trillions. Like some of us in a last meeting accidentally, Kim Krukel, in one of our last meetings accidentally said million instead of billion. Now we have to learn how to say trillion.
Trillion.
Like, I don't know, I'm excited.
Yeah. I talked to Kim about the presentation for May, and she said, oh my gosh, there's so many things to talk about at the ECF meeting. She's like, you're going to have to help me pick. And I'm like, oh, well, what a terrible problem, right?
Also, just what a shock. Like, I mean, not shock. It's a really happy shock, but coming from Joe Biden, like if you look at his history. So, I mean.
You of all people know, Cara. Like,
yeah. I mean, people can evolve, right?
Yeah. No, it's been surprising and lovely. Yeah. So we are just about at time. Thank you all, Malia and September. Thank you so much for sort of leading the way. And I think everyone is just so appreciative to learn from you, with you, you know, and help on their own efforts and journeys. And thank you all for being willing to be here. It's really exciting, and we'll get back to you with what our next steps are. So thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend. We're good?
Great. I mean, yeah. Shahina, stay. Feel free.
September, you're wonderful.
Thanks. Thanks for taking the next step with us, or leading us the next step and resourcing that. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I think
I hope you all can stay in the group.
Please.
Yeah, this kind of work we'll prioritize. We get a little spread thin like everybody, but yeah.
Yeah, crazy for me. But like having people like you all within this work, this is what helps. You know, this is part of the strategy for us, at least.